coming up on New York Now.
The data demonstrates the need for urgent action. We cannot wait for legislative session to begin, which is in January. We cannot wait for federal action.
New York State bans flavored e-cigarettes.
In my opinion, I do believe Governor Cuomo is using the news of an illicit THC product sold on the street to demonize an industry that sells FDA-regulated, FDA water-based liquids. Fire!
And we'll tell the story of a group of North Country volunteers remembering and honoring fallen American soldiers, long forgotten by their state and local government.
There's nowhere in this country that I know of that does not honor all of their vets if they know they're buried in the area. And for some reason or other, it's been completely overlooked.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Governor Andrew Cuomo backs off his license plate replacement plan, and Bill de Blasio backs off his plans to be president of the United States.
Time for a look at our headlines.
On Sunday, Governor Cuomo proposed an emergency ban on the sale of flavored e-cigarettes after a surge of severe breathing illnesses popped up across the country.
68% of the use are flavored products. And the flavored products are highly attractive to young people. Names like bubblegum, cotton candy, Captain Crunch, which was my favorite. These are obviously targeted to young people and highly effective at targeting young people.
On Wednesday, the state's Public Health and Health Planning Council met in Albany and across the state, where they voted in favor of the ban, with the exception of vaping products with menthol and tobacco flavors.
The data demonstrates the need for urgent action. We cannot wait for legislative session to begin, which is in January. We cannot wait for federal action. New York State is the second state to propose and the first state to implement a ban on flavors. The ban will become effective immediately with a 2-week grace period before the enforcement begins. And adult smokers who want to continue to use e-cigarettes will have the option of unflavored, menthol, or tobacco-flavored e-cigarettes.
Several business owners attended the meeting in Albany to speak out against the proposed ban.
Living in New York with Governor Cuomo, you can never really be too surprised by anything. So we knew it was a topic in legislature for a couple years. He just took some measures that he thought would protect the public in raising the age to 21. And he also enforced a 20% sales tax, which hasn't even kicked in yet. So we were surprised that he didn't at least try to see how that did for him first. In my opinion, I do believe Governor Cuomo is using the news of an illicit THC product sold on the street to demonize an industry that sells FDA-regulated, FDA water-based liquids.
Retailers now have 2 weeks to remove the products from shelves. Commissioner Howard Zucker stressed it is not against the law to possess any of these flavored e-cigarette vaping products. More on this at the Reporters Roundtable. The governor held a press conference earlier this week to launch a statewide education campaign on the new red flag law. The legislation allows a concerned family member, school official, or member of law enforcement to seek a court order to remove and keep guns away from those who may harm themselves or others.
Red flag law is a powerful tool. It says if you feel something, you hear something, you have a direct access through your school principal or principal's designee, and that is a direct access for action. You don't have to go to the family. You don't have to go to a law enforcement officer. You have direct access. And maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, but that's for a judge to decide. You don't have the authority. You're not going to take anything from anybody. All you're going to say is, I think this should be looked at because I think there may well be a problem here. And then a judge decides. But it says to you who is in the midst of this, who has more information than anyone, more intuition than anyone, there is something you can do. And that's the red flag law.
Cuomo hosted the first of three conferences with teachers, school administrators, and parent representatives. The law went into effect August 24th. And finally, the governor was joined by leaders of the Time's Up movement Wednesday in New York City as he signed legislation that extends the statute of limitations to 20 years for rape in the second degree and 10 years for rape in the third degree. Actress Mira Sorvino, who revealed in Albany earlier this year that she was a survivor of date rape, praised the work of the governor and legislators who helped pass the bills.
So I and we are here to say to survivors, you are not to blame. You are not worthless. You are not less than. You are not dirty or damaged goods. You are not without recourse or support or credibility. You are not without hope. And perhaps most importantly, you are not alone. We are here for you to extend our love and our comfort and our tears and our anger for you. You, the survivors, the strong ones. And we will fight for you until this society does its utmost to protect you and to halt the course of so many men who thought rape and sexual misconduct was their right and privilege. We will do it together, for all the Phoenixes, we will rise. Please come join us. Thank you very much.
Prior to the new law, victims had 5 years to bring a legal case alleging rape in the second or third degree. For more now on the week's news out of Albany, we join my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler.
All right, and now for some analysis of the week's news. I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Mike Gormley, Capitol correspondent from Newsday, and a new addition to the roundtable, Shannon Young from Politico, who covers healthcare. Thanks very much for coming in. So, Shannon, we're going to start with you and talk about the escalation in the Cuomo administration's war on vaping, in particular, the governor's call for the health department to institute a ban on flavored vape products.
Right. So this week, after kind of teeing it up a little bit last week, Governor Cuomo had a committee sort of in the health department vote to ban flavored vape products. So that includes like the e-liquid devices that are in vaping. And the ban includes all flavors, mint, candy, fruit flavors, except for menthol and tobacco. And the menthol flavor not being included really kind of rubbed a lot of anti-tobacco advocates the wrong way. They're saying, you know, it's one of the most popular flavors among teens. I think they threw out a statistics where about two-thirds of teen vapers say they either use the mint or the menthol flavors. And they're saying, if we really want to be serious about this, we need to include menthol in the ban. The Cuomo administration said, well, we recognize this, we understand that, but we still want to do a little bit more research. We want to do a little bit more outreach. So, you know, we're going to think about it for a couple weeks and then go back. So the ban right now is in effect for 90 days. It's like a temporary emergency rule. It can be extended, modified, but for a real permanent ban, it still has to go through the legislature.
First in the nation, correct, to be implemented. I think it was Michigan that had one sort of on the pad, but it's
right.
Still in draft form, right?
Right. According to the Cuomo administration, who really like to tout this fact, yeah, it is the first ban on flavored vape products in the nation, but Michigan did announce that they're going to do it too. I guess they have regulations that are in the process, but haven't completely gone through yet. So, yeah, the first.
First in the nation is a big term for the governor.
Yeah.
And to his credit, he does do a lot of legislation that's first in the nation. But this is one of those examples where I think they took the easy stuff so they could be first in the nation,
right.
And they're putting off the more difficult stuff. As you said, menthol is difficult because of some members of the African-American community. Tobacco, you know, everyone thinks big tobacco is going away, but there's still a force in Albany and capitals all over the country. And it's more in stopping things than in getting things. But that's a tougher nut to crack.
You've got the vaping industry and also some people who are vaping enthusiasts saying this stuff, you know, you might not like it, but it helped me get off of old school, traditional, exceedingly bad for you cigarettes. And that's another consideration.
Right. You have the New York State Vapor Association that was at the council meeting this week, who were very vocal about their opposition to this ban, saying not only does it help people quit smoking traditional cigarettes, but it'll be a big hit to a lot of small businesses in the state who make most of their profits on flavored vape products, not just traditional tobacco products or tobacco-flavored products. So, you know, whether it actually does help people quit smoking, there is a debate about that. And, you know, Cuomo administration said, I believe the governor said, well, it's better than smoking, but not much better. So, you know, there still is debate there, but there is no debate to the fact that the Vapor Association and vaping enthusiasts are very upset about this.
And we should note this all takes place in the context of these terrible, mysterious respiratory difficulties that have resulted in some fatalities around the country as well.
Right, and that was another issue that was raised at this council meeting. It was, you know, people were saying, well, let's not conflate the issue of the lung illnesses, which have been so far related to THC products, illicit black market products, not just regular vape products. So there, you know, a lot of these vaping association members or store owners were saying, why are we getting punished when it's black market products that are causing this illness? And the health commissioner, Howard Zucker, said, well, you know, there's been a huge growth in teen vaping, which we want to address, and we want to discourage people from vaping in general currently, given all of the lung illnesses. So it's kind of two issues here that are together, but, you know, some advocates are saying, why are we tying the two?
Right.
Shannon, that's a really good point, conflating these two somewhat separate issues. That's, you know, politically, that's intentional. It has helped push along the ban on flavored cigarettes. But, you know, health advocates have got to be out there saying, you know, who do I pick in this fight? I mean, it's a complicated issue.
Right.
Right. And I think it's interesting to point out, too, that Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal had this bill at the end of session. She tried to push it. She had the PAVE mothers come up from New York City. They really tried to make hay about this. And it didn't go anywhere.
Got no traction.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see how now all of a sudden all these lung illnesses have been reported, that there's more movement for this issue.
I believe it was the same day as the DOH meeting that, Mike, you attended, another controversial meeting of the commission that is meant to implement, and it will have the force of law, a system of publicly financed campaigns. And, of course, there's always a burr, the possible end to fusion voting in New York.
Yeah, fusion voting is in, not many states have this anymore. It used to be legal nationwide, but now there's just a few states, New York being one of them. Fusion voting is when you can vote for a candidate on a major party line, but also on a minor party line, say the Conservative Party, the Working Families Party, some of these other minor parties. And all those votes are added together for the candidate. That has been something, that's been a way an awful lot of people who are incumbents now got into politics. The minor parties help out. Now, from the point of view of the minor parties, they want to shut the door on that for everyone else. Advocates on both sides say that fusion voting leads to corruption. Eliminating fusion voting would give the major parties even more power. There's again another complex debate here. The minor parties have also created their own like little fiefdoms, and there's patronage involved in this. So it's been part of New York's landscape for a long time. The governor and the legislative leaders included fusion voting under this bill to implement public financing of campaigns. A lot of people think it doesn't belong there. There's also a lot of insiders who are saying, this is so ingrained and so many people are conflicted on this because they've taken these minor party lines that nothing's going to happen. But this is the shot across the bow to try to get the minor parties in line.
There was a special controversy surrounding this week's hearing, which took place in Albany at the Rockefeller Institute, in what I would describe as a really pretty small room, considering how many people are interested in this subject. Mm-hmm. Jay Jacobs, who is Governor Cuomo's appointee to the commission and is also the head of the state Democratic Party, apparently attempted to recruit people to come in to essentially offer the critical view of fusion voting, and that was seen as essentially Jacobs trying to stack the deck.
Yes, he had contacted, he's denying most of this. He said he talked to people in the party, which would be people under him, saying we need people to come out here and say, you know, fusion voting has to go. even though Jay Jacobs, the state Democratic chairman, is saying that he's keeping an open mind on this. Governor Cuomo says he has no position on fusion voting. There's certainly a movement by the powers that be to end fusion voting. But there are also a great many people from the minor parties that showed up for this in support of it.
The governor has backed off his proposal to implement a 10-year automatic $25 replacement fee for license plates. This was something that has been very controversial for a while. And finally, this week, and after a Siena poll came out, the governor just said, okay, we're scrapping this. We're not moving ahead.
Right, but if you ask the governor, this is something that the DMV said that, well, we're open to other ways of checking these plates and you know, seeing if after 10 years they need to be replaced. So, you know, it depends who you ask in this issue. But basically, yes, the administration has backed off requiring people to change their plates every 10 years. And the move towards this is, of course, for automated tolling. They say that, you know, the gantries that scan these plates need to be able to read them. They need to see the reflective coating. And the governor mentioned, too, that he also polishes his own license plates so that they show up. And so
that's a vivid image, without a doubt. We're talking Friday morning. The news just broke that Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City is out of the presidential race.
Yeah. The liberal, well, he was supposed to have been the liberal icon for the country for years now. He came out of the Clinton administration with Governor Cuomo. Bill de Blasio part of it was that there was such low turnout in the mayor's race right from the beginning that he never had a majority support in the city, and everyone took advantage of that. The governor feuded with the mayor right from the beginning. But, you know, back in 2016, I was in Iowa covering the presidential campaigns, and Bill de Blasio was out there drumming up liberal support, and they loved him out there. It's people who know him well that don't seem to like him. And it was actually becoming the butt of the jokes on late night TV, and that's usually the death knell. You know, the people hate, he just couldn't get traction. And frankly, I'm not sure why. I mean, he had a lot of the same ideas that these people have, but it just never worked.
I think part of the problem is that there's just so many Democrats running that to make your message heard, you might have to throw out something, you know, very controversial, like Beto O'Rourke has done with his gun proposals. But, you know, in that crowded of a field, I think it's hard to stand out.
Hard to make noise. All right, that's where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Mike Gormley of Newsday and Shannon Young from Politico. We really appreciate the good analysis. Please come back. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
Time now for this week's New York Now poll question. Would you like to see an end to fusion voting? Let us know on our website, nynow.org. Last time around, we asked, do you think the state should ban flavored e-cigarettes? And 64% said yes, including Ann in Schenectady County. Flavored e-cigarettes are targeted to minors. Banning these will help protect our children from the possibility of a vaping addiction. Lauren in Queens, watching on WNET, said banning only drives these products underground, where they will be unregulated and even more dangerous. And finally, William in Yonkers, a longtime viewer, told us, I'd like to have the state legislature and competent medical authorities exhaustively look into the matter and publish their findings for all of us to read and consider. As always, we appreciate your opinion. To tell us yours, again, just head to nynow.org. It's where you can find hundreds of past programs and links to us on social media, including Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, where our handle is @nynow_PBS. And now for a story of patriotism in the North Country, where a lonely island holds the remains of 50 American soldiers. Although if not for the work of several members of the community, you'd never know it.
There's nowhere in this country that I know of that does not honor all of their vets if they know they're buried in the area. And for some reason or other, it's been completely overlooked.
Gone and forgotten. This is Crab Island, located about a half mile from shore in Lake Champlain. During the War of 1812, this body of water was the site of the pivotal Battle of Plattsburgh. During the fight on the morning of September 11, 1814, Crab Island served as the site of a makeshift hospital for the wounded. After the fighting was over, the dead were brought here, approximately 150 soldiers, a third of which were Americans. They were all buried in three long trenches on the island. It's believed to be one of the only places in the world where British and American soldiers, while enemies, lay side by side in the same grave. It took decades, but in the early 20th century, a fitting tribute was created. A 50-foot granite monument was built in honor of those lost here and at nearby Valcour Island during the Revolutionary War. A short walk takes you to an impressive 100-foot flagpole designed to look like a ship's mast, with a crow's nest to boot. The island was officially named McDonough National Military Park, after Commodore Thomas McDonough, who led the American forces at the Battle of Plattsburgh. It even had a caretaker that lived in a small cottage. But over time, likely due to its isolation, it became an afterthought. A couple decades later, the caretaker was long gone, the cabin a victim of a fire. In the late 1980s, the state used eminent domain to take ownership of the island, but by the next decade, you'd be hard-pressed to see any evidence of the historical significance here. The green started to cover the white obelisk, and the flagpole fell victim to a summer windstorm. A place that was once a symbol of American pride was largely abandoned.
Their bodies have been laying out there with no recognition, no honor, no glory, of which they deserve. After all, they fought for the freedom of this country and the birth of a new nation. And to not have their flag flying and their flagpole standing, which they proudly fought and deserve, was a crying shame. And that's how I got involved in this.
John Rock, his fellow members from the American Legion and other volunteers weren't going to wait around anymore for the state to clean up Crab Island and honor the 50 Americans buried here. So they did it themselves.
A local retired teacher, Roger Harwood, decided, at his own expense, to take his riding lawnmower out on his boat. He started to clear the thick brush and mow what slowly then turned into more of a lawn.
Pretty much no place you could go ashore on Crab Island in those days without being waist-deep in poison ivy. It's still that way if you get off the trails, but the trails, if the trails are mowed and that land is mowed, it's pretty good.
Roger and other volunteers restored the original trails first created in the early 1900s. The bigger lift, literally, came in trying to figure out what to do with the fallen flagpole, 100 feet long and weighing in at a whopping 6,000 pounds. After repairing and restoring the flagpole, the group got help from then Governor George Pataki and had a Chinook helicopter pull the newly restored flag back up, only to break it when it pulled it too hard.
We got our group together, cut the top off, brought it to shore. Over the winter, we had it repaired, all put back together, and that winter was a cold winter. So we took the top of the flagpole, we put it in the back of a pickup and let it drag, and we drove up the lake with a pickup truck, put it back on the island, on the ice. So that's how we got to that 54-foot section back out on the island. Then we went over in the spring with our boats, assembled it, and stood the pole up by hand. I worked for the power company, so we knew how to stand up poles, big or small, by hand. So, and we got volunteers and everybody went out there, and our Legion was very adequate about sending people and getting people and friends and everything else. But we did assemble it, we got it up, and their flag flies today, right to this day.
You might ask, why is it that community volunteers did all this work and not the state? Roger Harwood recalls someone from an agency asking him for his social security number many years ago for workers' compensation issues. But other than that, the volunteers have been pretty much left alone. According to Dan Keefe, a spokesperson for the Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation, they consider Crab Island a passive, undeveloped state park and says they do periodic inspections, although he couldn't specify how many or how often. He said they'd be happy to work with them to formalize a relationship if that's what the volunteers want, including obtaining possible grants for future work.
We could sit here and finger wag, or we could take the time to roll up our sleeves and do what's right. We don't want to finger wag. We want to do good work. We want to honor the veterans. We want to tell the stories that need to be told.
In addition to taking care of the island, the group has also placed a bronze plaque with the names of the American soldiers that are buried here. In 2010, a British woman with family ties to a colonel who fought in the war was so moved by the volunteers' dedication that she and her husband purchased a granite monument that now sits at the base of the flag. It displays the names of 47 known British soldiers who are also buried here. every September 11th, the volunteers pile in boats and hold a ceremony honoring the American soldiers.
Fire!
The exact location of the burial ground is unknown, but thanks to the dedication of these North Country volunteers, the soldiers are gone, but not forgotten.
It gives you a feeling that you can't describe. We have been out here and the Eagles have circled the flagpole at different occasions on the laying the wreath, and it gives you a feeling that you just can't stay away. You keep coming back time after time, and it gives you a feeling that of honor, pride, and glory that we are honoring the vets that are out here.
All right, a real feel-good story there. The Clinton County American Legion is partnering with the town of Plattsburgh in developing a veterans park just across from the island on a site left vacant by the U.S. Air Force. It's called the Battlefield Memorial Gateway Project. To learn more about their plans, you can head to battlefieldmemorialgateway.org.
And that's all the time we have this week. We say goodbye with more footage from Crab Island. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Ryan. If you like what you hear, rate and review us right on your mobile device. When you do so, it makes it a little easier for people trying to find us. And thanks so much for listening to the New York Now podcast.